Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Rachel, exclusively on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to the show. Today is Friday, August 4th.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm trying to bring up my CNN page, but what is happening is my keyboard is typing different characters from what I'm putting in.
Wow.
There's like a button that says function, and it's typing the wrong. So I didn't have the news page in front of me.
That's okay.
But that's good. Yeah, it doesn't really matter, right? Because we have more and more of Trump, and I've had it already with all these news. You know, we're not making any progress here.
It's all right.
Yeah.
Well, last night was fun.
Thank Where
you
were
for
you
coming.
Last night?
I was at, well, we were at Flappers Burbank because I had a comedy show.
Yes.
And thank you for coming.
Of
what did
course,
you think?
I didn't.
Tell me what you thought.
Listen, well, first I didn't plan on coming because I had plans with my parents. And then it got to be about 8 o'clock, and I said, you know what? Let me see if I can still make it to
Amazing.
The show. It took me 20 minutes to get from Woodland Hills to Burbank, which is...
Well, I was at the end of the show.
Right,
so
right.
So it worked out.
But I got there about 8:20 or
yeah,
something, so
got
it wasn't
there
too
early.
Bad.
You got there early.
I missed, I think, one or two, but
That's
that
right.
was it. But did I race through the valley? I'm telling you. So
what did you think of the show?
The show was good.
Yeah.
I thought people were laughing. It was
yeah.
a good crowd, right?
What did you think of my set?
Your set was good too.
Okay. Good.
I've heard a few of them already
yeah,
before.
Okay,
so,
okay, okay.
But it was no, you killed. I mean,
Thank you.
Really, people
were
laughed.
Laughing.
People were laughing.
Okay, good.
It was funny, and yeah, and Lisa did a good job. I think yesterday,
She's
you know,
great.
With the, yeah, she brought a lot.
I wasn't
of,
the worst one.
No, I meant I meant she put together a good show.
Oh, she always
not just her
amazing.
Set.
Yeah,
yeah. So it's nice to watch women comics. You know, it's maybe a little different. You know, they talk about different subjects and stuff. But I love it. I don't know why people don't give female comics a little more credit. You know,
yeah,
a little
know.
More chance. But what can you do? It was nice. I ate and.
Thank
yeah, I'm glad that I came.
Coming.
And I met your family, too.
Yeah.
That was your aunt and your cousin,
that
wasn't
That was my aunt and my cousin.
Wow, that's
yeah.
cool.
You're meeting the family shortly.
I know,
One by one.
At least you get some support.
Next thing we know, Sam's in our Christmas Hanukkah picture.
Yeah,
you know
exactly.
What I mean?
In the family party, the family dinner. So did you have fun last night there?
It was good, yeah.
Yeah, did you feel it was good?
I didn't think it was my strongest show, but this is, I'm trying a lot of these jokes that, like, this is a completely different set. I think there was maybe, like, one joke that I kept from the first set I ever, that
yeah,
I started
yeah,
out with.
Yeah, yeah, there
was
some
but,
new stuff that was good.
Yeah, so I'm just trying to build on what I have. The OJ stuff was always good.
Yeah, it always goes over well. What I was thinking is, you know, obviously, and many of them were talking about, you know, the dream of being a comic and stuff, how the parents don't get it and all that. So it's nice to see that people are following their dreams, you know, and doing something. Because I thought, you know, if nobody did, we wouldn't have any comics, you know, we wouldn't be sitting here being entertained.
We wouldn't have anything.
Right. So in just a moment, we're going to be joined by our guest. And for a change, we're not going to talk about cannabis today. We've been talking too much about it lately.
A different kind of weed.
Yeah, right.
Seaweed.
We're going to talk about seaweed today and stuff that we don't normally think about. But that should be a very interesting show. So any plans for the weekend? You going to go to the beach again and get
probably,
burned?
Yeah, I'm still suffering from this serious burn that I got at the beach. I will probably go back, yes. Mm-hmm. And Lisa is her boyfriend's out of town, so she's like, come over, girl. So I want to maybe spend some time with her and some of the female
Lisa's
comics.
Your mentor as far as
she's
comedy and stuff.
She's amazing.
Yeah. Very nice, you know. I mean, that's very cool because when you connect with the right people, you get a lot of opportunities.
Yes,
you know?
Exactly. Well, I mean, technically, my sorority sister. I mean, it all is an invisible thread if you really want to go that far back. But my sorority sister introduced me to Lisa, who, you know, I did comedy and then I did that show, which led me to this show. And it's invisible thread.
Yeah, your life is one soap opera. There you go.
Not a soap opera, well, but everything is connected.
Okay. Well, maybe it'll be soap opera one day. You have a lot of drama in the family.
If it's the right amount.
Yeah. So I don't really know what's going on in the news.
I just saw that Jeff Sessions was, and then some other old white guy was out talking about stopping leaks in the White House, mm-hmm. and that they're very serious about it and don't do it again. And if you do it, you're going to be in big trouble. That's literally the words that they use.
Really?
But that's not going to stop the leaks. They're going to still come.
Right. That's true.
It's a very leaky administration.
Yeah. Now, Kristen Stewart says she would still date men. She's gay, right? She's a lesbian. And she's come out.
I mean, I don't think there needs to be a label. I think she just likes people.
Okay. So she likes women mostly. And now she says that she's open to men too. So she
started off by dating a man.
Really?
Her co-star Robert Pattinson was from Twilight. They were together for years, and then she dated a director before that. She dated a whole slew of men.
So why does it say? Why is that like news then?
I think people are just fascinated by her because she was the cultural icon of like a certain period of time because she was a part of that movie series, the Twilight series.
Right.
Probably. I mean, why are we fascinated with any of that?
Yeah. She says, I've always really embraced a duality. So
that's what I'm saying is like we as a society put labels on things. Therefore, we put people into boxes.
But you have to categorize things in order to understand them. I mean, you know,
things you can. Right. But I also think that everything is always changing and moving and evolving. Like nothing ever stays the same. And a label there's a finality, a finite to something when it's labeled. Like there's no, you can't.
Well, but if someone comes out and says I'm a lesbian, then she's a lesbian, you know? I mean, she's the one.
I don't think
she came
out saying she was a lesbian. I just think that
she
started.
So how did people find out?
Because she was pictured dating a woman. Oh. You don't need to come out and say it. I mean, I think that she just likes what she likes. I mean, there's people.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not judging her for this. I'm just saying that apparently some people think it's news because they put it up there. But
I think what she's saying is we all know she used to date men if you know her. I mean, we don't, but if you follow or care, these people who are interested in her should know she used to date men. And then she went through a period of time where she's been dating women. And I think what she's saying is she would go back to dating men too.
Okay, but she did on Saturday Night Live, it says here that she described herself as so gay during her monologue. So, you know, I don't know. That was in February. But either way, I mean, it doesn't really matter. The point is that she likes both, and that's the news for today, right?
I mean, I think that's like, I feel like you see a lot of that in LA, but I feel like you see a lot of that everywhere. It's just not, it's not really talked about. People don't, aren't open about their sexuality.
Yeah, that's true.
Of society.
For those of you who don't have anything to do next Saturday, we're going to be over in Manhattan Beach at, it's called Lunch at the Beach. It's going to be awesome. They're going to have a lot of like restaurants and wine and food and all that stuff.
But it's not at the beach.
No, it's not on the beach. It's so you'll have to look it up. We're going to have information on our social media and stuff.
Yes,
and
we are.
We'll continue teasing it. But it'll be fun because many of our hosts said they'd be there. And we're going to broadcast from there. So that's going to be cool. All right, folks, we're going to bring in our guest right now, who's sitting here patiently. Thank you very much. You're going to have to get close to the mic now. We're joined by Eric Noel Munoz, right? Is that how you say it?
That's how I say it.
Awesome. Welcome to the show, Eric.
Thank you.
And so you brought us your book. You deal with ecology, the oceans, what's going on in the environment. Is that correct to say? Are you involved in the environment?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
I was also a city planner by profession and still do consulting, but I'm also involved in ocean issues. And my book, try to put a spotlight on a really important one.
Sounds good. Now, as a city planner, what did that involve? What were you doing there?
Well, in the city of Carlsbad, as a staff planner, I was involved with a lot of coastal issues because it's a coastal city.
Right.
We have three lagoons, which is kind of unique. We had a lot of trails, a lot of open space, but also a lot of development. So I had to deal with the agencies and the community and people trying to do stuff in the community. And I think it turned out pretty good.
Yeah.
But when this issue came up on our lagoon, I was the staff planner who was kind of looking at coastal issues on behalf of the community and making sure the manager and the mayor kind of knew what was up.
Yeah. So what did you discover there? I mean, you obviously discovered something about the ocean. Tell us what it is.
Well, one of our lagoons, Agua Hedionda Lagoon, is also the home of a power plant. Mm-hmm. And it uses the ocean water to cool the turbines. Okay.
Right.
And what they have to do is they have to dredge all the sand out of the lagoon so the lagoon does not fill up, so the water can flow and cool the turbines.
Okay.
Now they had to plant eelgrass because they dredged the sand. And because they dredged the sand, they had to plant the eelgrass and check its growth. As they were checking the growth of the eelgrass, they found this plant, which was not supposed to be there. It's bright green, and it's not basically a native plant. And
really?
And the biologist who found it said, hey, this doesn't look right, and they looked into it. So that was the tip of the iceberg that led to this discovery that we had this genetic mutant clone of a seaweed in our lagoon, and they realized this is what was messing up the Mediterranean back in the early 2000s.
Oh, wow.
Really?
Wait, how did it get there, though?
Yeah, if it's not native to us. Now, is this like seaweed that flows with the ocean, or does it actually grow on the bottom?
It's a great question. It grows on the bottom. Mm. And the way we found it, Rachel, which is a great question, and it's a big part of the story, is aquarium release. This was a genetic mutant clone of a natural counterpart. The natural version of Caulerpa taxifolia grows throughout the tropical areas in the world. It has fish that eat it. They keep it in check. But this is a genetic mutant clone that was modified in a laboratory in the 70s in Germany, kind of like a Frankenstein.
Whoa!
And it puts out a toxin. Fish do not eat it. And it can live through cold water, high salt water, and basically nothing can really kill it.
Why did they genetically design it? What was the purpose of it?
Well, the purpose of it was they were developing seaweed species for aquarium use.
Okay, so this was for like aquariums, basically.
Exactly. Now the size of the aquarium doesn't matter.
Not for nutrients or anything. Just simply for it to be seaweed growing in an aquarium. There's no benefit for it for the fish, right?
There's no real benefit for the fish, but as an aquarium plant, it did filter out some of the bad nutrients. So
okay,
that's
okay.
kind of a good part of it.
Okay.
But the other thing is that
If
it got out of the aquarium into the natural environment, then nothing would stop it. If you look on the cover of my book, this is the Monaco National Aquarium, a photo that I took when I was there in 2015. That was the first aquarium that really let it out into the natural environment.
Ah.
They just dumped it in the ocean?
Well, they were always kind of dumping stuff into the ocean.
Yeah.
And part of the problem was in the mid-80s when this happened, Jacques Cousteau was the manager of the aquarium. So there was a political sensitivity to not really say anything against the godfather of marine ecology because he had done so much good.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, they kind of didn't realize back at that time that they were putting something in the ocean that was supposed to stay in the aquarium. That's kind of a hard thing to ask for because a lot of people with personal aquariums up and down even our own coastline, they're always kind of emptying out their aquarium or putting their frog out there. In Carlsbad, the way we got it was someone cleaned out their aquarium next to a storm drain. So you always hear about storm drains connecting to oceans.
No way.
Yes. And that's what happened in Australia, in Adelaide. They have it in Sydney Harbor, for goodness sake, all the way down to the coastline with the border of Victoria, New South Wales. So it doesn't matter the size of the aquarium, whether it's a huge institutional aquarium or a small home aquarium.
Really?
An aquarium release is an aquarium release.
Mm.
And once this plant gets out there, it spreads by fragmentation. So that's like taking a leaf off of a tree and taking one little...
And it grows back a million times more, right?
You can take one little centimeter, one little fragment, and then it can be on your anchor line.
Yeah.
You can go 10 miles up the coast, go back with your snorkel gear, your anchor gear, your fishing gear. You don't realize that you're spreading it.
Yeah.
It's like a herpes of the ocean.
Sticks on you and doesn't go away. So how did you guys trace it back to that? This was a plant that was already known by scientists and stuff, right?
Yes, because in the 90s it was really messing up the Mediterranean. I have some posters there that I brought in just to show you guys. That one over there is from France, and you can see that it's just a golf a golf course looking field of this caulerpa.
Yeah, so it's
harmful to the fish.
It's not directly harmful, but it puts out a toxin, so fish don't eat it.
Okay.
So since fish don't eat it, they stay away from it, and it grows without any control.
Right.
Now, this other poster that I brought is from Croatia, and you can see on the bottom, you see all those pretty colors and all the bright coral reefs and all that stuff?
Right.
Well, that all got smothered and replaced by the top part of the photo, which is the Caulerpa taxifolia, the genetic mutant clone.
Have you seen that Netflix documentary, about the coral reefs?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I don't know if I told you this, but I watched it and it was like the week of my period and I couldn't stop crying.
Yeah, you said
like
that.
Like I literally, it was so sad
after
to see just like how the effects, because we were talking about this, just like the human body, even 1 degree, the ocean, we're all so sensitive, 1 degree off can affect everything. Right. Just one little, artificial plant or whatever for the aquarium.
But it does spread, huh? So it covers like complete areas, complete coral reefs with stuff like that, right?
It covers a coral reef, rocky bottom, sandy bottom, polluted areas, pristine areas. It really has no limit on where it can just keep growing and growing and growing.
Right.
That's fucked up.
Yeah. I wonder if this plant has any purpose. I mean, because everything's got a purpose.
Yeah, is there anything?
Right?
No, not
does it do anything good?
It's not natural.
No, it is natural. It's a plant.
Well, it was made, but it was in a lab, wasn't it? It was genetically, it's like a GMO seaweed.
It's kind of GMO. It's more selective breeding where they put it through stressors. It was more of a selective breeding thing because they didn't actually change
the
genome.
So if the scientists didn't do it, would this have formed naturally in the ocean, this type of thing?
No, they kind of cultivated this for aquarium use.
There's no purpose. The purpose of it is to make your aquarium look pretty.
Right.
That is the purpose.
Pretty much, right? It's kind of, does Frankenstein have a purpose?
Yeah, right. So they put together a genetically, so it's like, wow. I mean, this is amazing to me. So they sat in there, and really this was the reason, just to have a nice looking plant in the aquarium. That's why they did this.
Yes.
And then they started releasing into the ocean.
There's a couple big aquariums in Europe that first got it, and the Monaco one is the one that, you know, kind of has the tag of, you know, they did the release into the cove.
Okay, so that's how it got to the Mediterranean first, because it was in Germany, right? It was started there.
Right, Germany, they gave it to the Monaco Aquarium. There's another one or two aquariums in Europe that also
got it.
But then from there, it kind of went just to personal aquaria throughout the world. I mean, I have friends who had saltwater aquariums, you know, years ago, and they said, yeah, this plant overtook my aquarium.
Really?
You know, they had to bring clippings every month to the fish store, get new fish. They had to get a bigger tank.
I grew up with saltwater aquarium. My dad, he had one in his office, and we had one in our house. So, like, I always love fish and salt water, whatever. I love aquariums, but we never use that kind of stuff. He wouldn't even stand for that.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? Like, it was all.
That's very interesting, you know, because it also makes you think about, mutating other living things.
So when you go to like PetSmart and you see those,
it's out of control.
Right.
Yeah.
Like when you see those is that the stuff that's in the PetSmart?
Not anymore. Okay. Now it's outlawed. It's outlawed in California. It's a $10,000 fine to have it. It should be a national outlaw. And now there's more awareness, and there's actually laws that prevent it. But I tell you, like in 2008, I was in Australia, and the coastline south of Sydney, it's amazingly beautiful. They have these 12 wetlands that are Ramsar significance. That means they're internationally recognized as being significant for their biological value. Mm-hmm. And like at that time, 9 out of those 12 all had this caulerpa starting.
Oh, wow.
And there's signs I saw on my lagoon in Carlsbad and Agua Rionda. Now I was seeing the same types of signs in Australia, except they were unable to kind of jump on it early like we were. The early rapid response is the key to getting ahead of invasive species, and especially this one. And it's so sad because they have, you know, kangaroos hopping around, they got koala bears in the trees, and now they have caulerpa, and that means that they have no boating, they have no fishing, their biodiversity is going to go down.
Right.
So it's not just biodiversity, but it's the recreational use, Rachel, and then it's the economy. And by the time there's an economic impact, there's not an environmental solution.
Right.
Yeah, it's too late, right? Now, So how? So you discovered this and stuff, but you're obviously passionate about it. You wrote a book about it. What's the book about? I mean, obviously it's about this, but what can people expect to read up on it? You've done a lot of research, obviously.
I did. Thanks, Sam. I've done a lot of research. When I was at the city, I chronicled every major newspaper article, every major milestone, every major thing that the city council did. But then when I left the city and I went to private consulting and I became president of the Lagoon Foundation, that was in the eye of this hurricane as well. So then we started doing a bunch of outreach. I hooked up with David Marish, who's a big Hollywood celebrity guy, and he would do a lot of events with us, and he brought a lot of celebrities to us. Christopher Knight, who wrote my preface, Peter Brady, he's a fantastic guy, a strong ocean advocate, and we became, you know, close friends through this effort. And he wrote my preface, and he came and did a bunch of outreach with us. So it really opened up my eyes to a lot of things I didn't know I would get involved in. So I think when people read my book, what they're going to read, Sam, is kind of my personal story. It's not all hardcore science. I'm so happy some of my Amazon reviews say it's not all science. I was able to read it. And I didn't want to blow people away with the science. I wanted to make it very engaging, very easy to read. But it's kind of a personal story at my path over a 15-year period where I'm on the city trying to explain this to the mayor and the city council, trying to deal with the agencies, trying to deal with the citizens who did not want the lagoon shut down, to then doing outreach as the president of the Lagoon Foundation, going to Australia and New Zealand and making conference presentations. I went to the Mediterranean Institute of Oceanography in Marseille, France in 2015. I met some amazingly intelligent scientists and people. I met Alex Manise, who wrote the first book called Killer Algae, about how in France, how they let their opportunities slip through their fingers. And he also wrote a foreword to my book.
Yes.
And you can see on the back of my book, it says, "This is, to my knowledge, the first time anywhere in the world in which an invasive marine seaweed had been definitively eradicated." So it's kind of my personal story of going through this whole various realms of discovery on how this plant kind of led me. It captured me. I would always tell my friends that it didn't just invade Australia and the Mediterranean and our lagoon in Carlsbad, but this thing invaded my mind.
I can see that.
My heart and my soul.
Right.
I mean, I'm trying to get beyond it and look at invasive species and other larger issues, and I have so many other, you know, interests, you know, the ocean and surfing issues and so forth. But this I thought was such an important story. And you know, my dad and my mom went to Croatia in 2007, and sadly, but kind of cool, you know, my dad had a brain aneurysm and passed away over there. And it was just a sudden thing, but, you know, it was cool. I had a great relationship with him, and being in Croatia to help my mom out, I let the ocean kind of heal me in like a spiritual manner. And after I actually got through that kind of quick, I was amazed. And then I realized, oh yeah, well, they've got, you know, Calerpa problems in Croatia. So I started talking to the dive shops there, and I kind of talk about that as a short little tidbit in my book about, it's just another little piece of the puzzle of how my understanding of this whole issue, like across the world, far from just the Carlsbad shoreline or the California shoreline, that's kind of what I try to put in my book. So it's actually pretty, it's a real personal story of my dealing with this, but my yearning to tell the world, don't put aquarium stuff into the ocean, be careful about storm drains, be careful about genetically modified anything, and really care about the oceans, because if we don't have the oceans, then, you know, we don't have a good world. You know, everyone talks about saving the world. That means you got to save the ocean.
You have to. We don't even realize like how much we as humans, but an entire ecosystems rely just on the ocean, and like things like coral reefs and fish not being able to eat and breed, and you know,
and even climate, I mean, ocean currents affect climate as well, and so forth. And yeah, we don't pay enough attention, I think, to the ocean, you know, and yet 75% of the planet is water.
And that there's still parts of the ocean we haven't even discovered yet. I mean, it's like a whole, in that movie, they say it's like a whole nother planet.
I know, it's like easier to go to space than to the bottom of the ocean, right?
It seems like
So now, why do you think this issue became personal to you? How did it touch you?
I
would have seen this and said, oh, okay, cool, let's do something about it. I don't know that I would let it invade my body and my mind like it did for you. What do you think was the connection there?
Well, I really appreciate that question, Sam. and it's actually really easy for me to answer. you know, for years since a kid, I've just been absolutely enchanted by the ocean, and then by waves, and then by surfing, mm-hmm. and you develop a really intense relationship with something that has given you so much internal peace. I mean, I'll have a certain level of peace and calmness for the rest of my life because of waves I've had and ocean experiences I've had and things like that. So when I was lucky enough to study geography at San Diego State, and then I backstepped into city planning because there's nothing I thought I would do until I realized you can have a coastal city next to the ocean, and I realized the impact of this. I realized I was in the eye of this hurricane between the technical world and the emotional non-technical world, and I could relate to both folks, you know, the citizens, the council, then the agency and science people.
Right.
And I realized right away, knowing what happened in the Mediterranean, and they didn't pull it off, well, how are we going to pull it off?
Right.
You know, and in our lagoon, you know, you can go wakeboarding, you can go kayaking, now you can go stand-up paddling, which is a whole new, you know, issue in and of itself.
We're surfers.
And so back then I would kayak, and I realized, you know, we're going to lose our lagoon for recreational use, let alone the biodiversity, because lagoons are the nurseries for the ocean and the property values for people who want to have like a healthy lagoon in our city. And I remember I had a flash point where I actually wept for the lagoon. I actually cried thinking, shoots, you know.
You like, see, you're not the only one, Rachel.
Yeah. I'm very sensitive to the ocean. I'm an Aquarius, so it's a water bearer sign. Means anything, but I've always had... I always loved the ocean. Yeah. So
you were very emotional about it. And
well, yeah. I mean, I had an emotional moment. I'm not like an emotional basket case or anything, but I mean, although I would be emotional if I was taken away from the ocean or if the ocean was taken away from us. And I think that's kind of the foundational vector there of saying how did it really hit me is, you know, what a shame that because of an aquarium release of this silly plant for aquarium use that's not even really, really natural could shut down our lagoon. And it hit me, and I really wanted to give everything I had as far as how to deal with the city, how to deal with the community, how to use my understanding of things, how to deal with people, how to use humor, how to use intelligence, how to use protocol, timing, all these things into let's see if we can turn the corner on this. And there was a long time where I didn't think we would because of all the intelligent scientists that I've met at a conference in San Diego when this first started, scientists from around the world came to San Diego. They descended in San Diego, tried to help us. And they basically said, you got to do this, you got to do that. Mm. You can't blink, you got to jump fast. But the most intriguing thing they said is you can't touch it.
Really?
So how do you get rid of something that grows underneath the water, people can't see it, and you cannot touch it?
Why can't you touch it?
Because as soon as you start
it breaks off, and that's fragmentation.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
So the technique for eradication that we developed in our lagoon was tarps. First, they had to map it out. There's not good visibility in our lagoon to really even be able to map it. The divers had to swim shoulder to shoulder, squeezing each other's hands when it popped up in front of their mask, and then they punched it into the GPS.
Wow.
Very challenging just
to
map it.
Yeah, just to map it.
Just to map it. Once it was mapped, then they built tarps, PVC framed dark plastic tarps, and the tarps cut off the sunlight, killed it over time. Where it was really thick, they pumped chlorine, very extreme. Everything under the footprint of the tarps died, and there was maybe 70 to 75 tarps. They're not even really sure how many tarps there were. And what to do with the tarps after many years was another issue, but that's how we got rid of it. But the thing is that we have our lagoon has three pinch points, under coast highway by the coast, the railroad tracks and the freeway, and it gets very, very narrow. So when the tides are really high and really low, and the tides are moving very fast because of the new moon or the full moon, right?
Right.
We thought if there's one little centimeter, it can fly out into the ocean and get out like on Tamarack Reef and start going up and down the coast. I want to tell you real fast that when I did an outreach meeting at the senior center, and one of the things that really hit me how serious this issue was when these two guys from the Navy came. And they were in their uniform. They had just a battery of medals and pins. And,
right.
And I was very impressed. They didn't crack a smile the whole time. I'm always trying to get a smile out of someone.
Right?
I'm kind of looking at them, this and that. And at the end of the meeting, I went up to them and I introduced myself. I go, hey, you know, I'm Eric Munoz. I'm a senior planner with the city. I want to thank you guys for coming. But I was kind of curious, why did you come? And I talk about all this in my book, part of my personal, you know, accounts. I go, you know, why did you guys come to this outreach meeting at our senior center, you know? And the guy kind of looked at me and he gave me a little funny look, almost like, do you even realize what you're dealing with? And he said, you know, if this gets out into the open ocean and it starts going up and down the coast and it gets into the harbors, this could be the biggest economic issue mm-hmm. Southern California has ever faced. We're going to have to drain San Diego Bay, L.A. Bay, Long Beach Harbor, Newport Harbor, every ship, every barnacle, every piece of everything's got to get scraped. You have no idea how far this can go.
Yeah.
And I just went, holy smoke, shook his hand, said, well, thanks for coming.
Yeah, wow. You know? So you guys are dealing with something that's really hard to eradicate.
Yeah, that's why this brochure, it says here, destructive seaweed threatens California. We had no idea the extent where it could end. You know, instead of this dying in 66 degree Fahrenheit water, it can die in 58 degrees. So all of a sudden, you went from central Baja to the San Francisco coastline on a warm day.
Yeah, this is the stuff you would see in the aquariums when you were a kid.
So now, does this plant adapt also? Is that what you're saying? It can be in colder water now?
It adapts to cold water. It adapts to really salty water.
Wow.
It can be in pristine water, in polluted harbors, in rocky reef, coral reef, sandy bottom.
Yeah. Now I see why you call it a Frankenstein thing, because they put it together in a lab and it's now out of control.
Right. And it just shouldn't be anything in an aquarium, especially something like this shouldn't be in the natural environment.
Yeah. That's true.
Now, when I went to the Mediterranean in 2015, I actually went snorkeling with Dr. Manise, who wrote Killer Algae. And we went to a little cove in France, just outside of Monaco, and mind-bending beauty. I mean, this is like Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous, beautiful really? Coastline. I mean, I could go on just about that. But this plant now in the Mediterranean, because it's not really natural, it went through a regression where it kind of died off on its own. And this is also happening in Australia, where it's dying off on its own. But the thing is, the scientists don't know why that's happening. And now, after 3 to 5 years, now it's starting to come back. And I talk about this in my book. They don't know if it's related to solar cycles, you know, or if it's this other whole issue of biotiming, of how these things.
So they'll never be able to get rid of it there?
The baseline is altered. And only in many years, all they can do is monitor over time. But now it's starting to come back. The cove where I dove with Dr. Manise, in June, he said there was no Caulerpa. By the time I went in October, he went in September, he goes, oh, it's coming back. And when I dove with him in early October, I go, oh yeah, there it is. It was like, I see it. I mean, I got pictures of it in my book, and it's like, it was no mystery to me to see where it was. It's bright green, it's really pretty,
right?
But it's kind of just not supposed to be there, and you really don't realize the impact it can have on the biodiversity. And that you can now in my book, I cite things, the Minister of South Australia saying their $500 million fisheries industry, it was at stake because of this plant. I mean, I give concrete examples of around the world where it's happening, where the economy and fisheries and a lot of money and industries were at stake and still are. It's very thin ice.
Yeah. Very interesting stuff, you know. I mean, for those of you just joining us, we're talking to Eric Noel Munoz, and he wrote the book, how do you call it? Caulerpa?
Caulerpa.
Caulerpa Conquest is the name of the book. You guys can look it up. It's called, what's the full name of the plant?
Caulerpa, and that's Caulerpa. Caulerpa taxifolia.
Taxifolia, right.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And, so people can follow this and see what's going on, because this is, I wasn't even aware of it, you know. I mean, obviously many people are not, you know. So tell us a little bit about you. Were you born and raised in Carlsbad? Is that where you,
I was actually born and raised in Rancho San Pedro, Rancho Palos Verdes, but I like to just say San Pedro.
Yeah. So South Bay and all that. Yeah. So that's a pretty cool area to grow up, huh? I mean, next to the ocean and everything. California boy.
Yeah, it was
surfer.
What was beautiful there, what the peninsula teaches you is that waves come from different angles, and things like Catalina can block waves.
Really?
And when I started surfing, you know, we didn't have internet and surf camps and wave cams and kind of the warm embrace by society that surfing now seems to enjoy, but it was a lot less uncrowded then. But my point, Sam and Rachel, is that it made us travel.
Yeah,
we always had to travel, you know. South Swells, you go, you know, certain spots. North Swells, you go other spots. And, you know, we learned about the coast. So I always had a mindset of learning the coast by having to drive there to get out of our area. But when our home area had waves, it was very good. But my parents, my brother, I had a kind of a culture of traveling And I was really challenged to have my own definition of how am I going to live my life with compassion, intelligence, and adventure. And that was an early challenge that was laid out to me that I've just tried to meet through my local and foreign right. travels and always try and keep myself, you know, happy and entertained and satiated with some level of adventure through the ocean is my main thing. I mean, I know there's mountains and deserts and everything's wonderful, but for me, I'm absolutely just, you know, lost with the ocean. You know, Rachel, you said something earlier about how we don't realize how much the ocean helps the rest of the world. And, yeah. you know, the oxygen that we breathe, a lot of the oxygen comes from the kelp forest.
Oh, wow.
In the temperate mid-latitude climates around the world. It's the kelp that burps out a lot of the oxygen for us. And this Caulerpa could have attacked our kelp.
Oh, wow.
So it really goes full circle real fast as far as the importance of this. And I know this, you know, this, we found it in 2000. It was declared eradicated in 2006. And I would always say it's going to take people 10 years to realize what we did. So my book came out in 2016. But I mean, it's still 20 years. We're talking about, you know, what O.J. Simpson did or didn't do, you know, many years ago.
That'll be forever.
You know, so, and, but, you know, this is a true thing. And I just am happy to have the opportunity to get this book, because it was a monkey on my back for many years, you know,
yeah,
my friends,
huh?
And you got to get that story out.
Get it out there.
And so now it's out, but it has timeless lessons as far as, you know, caring for the ocean, the storm drain yeah. stuff, the whole genetic modification thing, so.
Yeah. Are there other people doing the same thing you are around the world?
Not so
I feel
much.
Like this could be like another Netflix documentary. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It'd be my dream to have another media vector and go out.
I mean, feel I like this needs to be more like the media. It's a book is one thing, but for people to actually see the visual impact of what, you know what I mean? Like it would be such a good story to turn into like the coral reef, you know what I mean? People can read about coral reefs, but to see it visually,
right.
the impact and... You know.
Well, what I would love to do along those lines, Rachel, I would like yeah. to go back to Australia, do an update.
Yeah.
Go back to the Mediterranean. I mean, it started in Monaco. Now it's in, you know, they have it in Monaco, France, Italy, Spain, Croatia.
You guys definitely have to film a documentary about this.
Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. it's in Tunisia. They just found it in Rhodes and in Malta. As far as other people, I will.
So it's not eradicated. I mean, you said that
in
they
his,
claimed it
his,
was eradicated
in his
no, but
California.
He said in 2006 it was eradicated, right?
From Carlsbad.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah,
from
Carlsbad.
And I also have to mention, to be technically correct, there was one other location. Huntington Harbor also had this.
Okay,
just north of south of Seal
yeah.
Beach.
Right.
But their connection with the ocean wasn't as direct and as tidally influenced as ours. We had like a straight shot to the ocean. Mm. They had a bunch of screens and channels and a circuitous path, but it was still an issue there too. So there technically were two issues. They had the aquarium release from. I've seen pictures of some of the beautiful homes in the yacht basin of Huntington Harbor, kind of like a Newport Bay scenario,
right.
where they had aquariums on the deck of their home, and they had pipes directly into the...
The ocean,
well,
into the water.
Into the marina waters,
right? Right,
right. So the fact that they were just, you know, someone dumped Caulerpa was like a no-brainer after a while.
God.
And there they had, the divers yeah. had a strange issue of, it was kind of a, not an artificial habitat, but it was kind of a man-made, you know, habitat.
Yeah.
It was like a heaven for stingrays.
Oh, wow.
And so the scuba divers there had to deal with, like, the whole ground was covered with all these stingrays, and they're trying to, like, find the Caulerpa. And so, anyway.
Underneath.
That's
wow.
crazy.
Very interesting stuff. So the book is Caulerpa Conquest, and I would imagine people should probably Google this, right, and find out more about this in general. So you're saying there's no other people as active as you around the world? Is passionate about it?
Well, I don't know. I might be in the top.
Are you like the master of this, the master of knowledge as far as this goes?
Well, maybe in the Western Hemisphere, maybe at least in California.
Yeah,
I,
right.
I know a lot of other people. I know a lot of agency people. A lot of my colleagues that I worked with were, very passionate. You know, there's a guy at an agency named Greg Peters. When this started, he said, and I talk about this in my book, and it's on Amazon, by the way, so you can Google it. It's on Amazon as well.
Yes.
And he said, this is the challenge of our careers because the whole California coast is at stake. So those are like pretty strong words to hear
yeah.
from a real mild-mannered guy who had a lot of credibility in what he did. I have to mention Alex Manise. He wrote
okay.
Killer Algae. He wrote Killer Algae in 1999. And I felt like he knighted me at the conference in 2001. And I talk about this also where, you know, I was the only guy from, maybe they were expecting to meet the mayor or someone, and all, you know, all they got was me. and I met him. You know, the guy had sun on his face. He was a scuba diver. He had all these, you know, Italian and Croatian and Japanese and New Zealand scientists surrounding him. And he was like a spiritual leader for all the folks there. And I was he was really a gregarious and intelligent guy. And he told me, you know, I think you guys are going to get rid of it. And I just thought, there's no way we're going to get rid of it. How, you guys couldn't do it, you know? Yeah. And then when I went and reconnected with him in 2015, he was so warm and nice to me. And I think he saw like a version of him and me, because I was just like lost on this whole topic, you know? Mm-hmm. And we went snorkeling together. We were like just two little 8-year-old kids, you know, like she's grabbing my camera, taking pictures, taking videos, pointing it out stuff in here and there. And it was just such a great experience. But then when I also went to the Mediterranean Institute of Oceanography in Marseille, I met with one of his students, Thierry Thibault, and another one of his colleagues. They are still finding Caulerpa. I mean, this other guy actually found Caulerpa in Greece, and he's as recently as 2-3 years ago. He's finding Caulerpa. Yeah, Mark Vallac, and he is like the intelligence of these guys just like blows me away. I was like,
very interesting. So you get a lot of nice color pictures in the book as well. And so you guys can really see what he's talking about, you know. And this is, wow. So, now, I mean, obviously for people that are into oceans and stuff, this is even doubly as important, I think, because they have that connection. And you have a connection to the ocean. Do you go boating and things like that sometimes? I mean, do you spend time on the ocean other than surfing?
That's another good question.
Yeah.
Don't have a boat myself. I have friends with boats, but I love boating. I absolutely love boating. I love fishing, but I don't do enough of it. I actually don't like that moment of kill, but I love having the fish on my plate, you know, all filleted, ready to eat. plus, I'm kind of a wuss when it comes to cleaning it and all that stuff. But
I know.
But I absolutely, you know, love the ocean. I also do stand-up paddling. I like to go distance. I like to go, you know, like 8-10 miles in a shot.
Right.
If the waves are really small, I'll
do
that.
That's far.
But I'm not one of those guys trying to do stand-up paddling.
In the middle of the ocean?
Where do you go 10 miles? Like along the coast,
kind of along the coast.
Coast, not literal. Out the coast. I was like 10 miles into the ocean, your paddleboard?
Well, I'll go like a mile or two out.
Oh,
really?
Wow.
You know, the whole, so you have to bring up the shark thing, right? Because, you know.
I guess there have been sharks there.
You know, a lot of people ask me, there is definitely a change. I think global warming's part of it. I think that overfishing's part of it. I think there's a change in the distribution of where the predator sharks are, where the younger sharks are, where now they have to be, now they're closer to people. But I also think that there's just a lot more people in the water. I mean, there's cell phones. I mean, people brush their teeth and they like post it, you know what I mean? I could have posted years ago baby great white sharks jumping a mile off the shore in Carlsbad, because we have an offshore canyon that comes close to shore. Oh. And in the canyon where it gets really deep, relative just a mile offshore, I've seen them. And if I would have had my GoPro, then, wow, you know, shark off Carlsbad. I think they get kind of a bad rap. Now, you know, I feel really bad for that lady who got attacked, you know, in churches by trestles, you know, in April. And that's absolutely horrible. And stuff like that happens, you know, every couple years. Anyway,
what was she doing? Was she just out swimming?
She was swimming with fins, yeah. And she was on a board. But, you know, you just can't control that. But for me, it's kind of like saying, hey, well, I looked at the freeway and I saw a car.
Right, right. No, that's true. And besides, look, I mean, we're encroaching on their territory. We can't blame the sharks.
I just feel, aren't they looking for fish?
They're doing their thing.
Exactly. Whatever moves.
We're just a bigger version of fish.
Yeah, they want flesh. That's what they want.
I'm not going to be satisfying for you. There's not a lot of meat on here, you know? I can talk them out of it. Like, eat my boyfriend.
Well, even he. I mean, relatively speaking, you know, humans are too bony for sharks. It's an exploratory bite. It's a tough exploratory bite, that's for sure. But anyway.
Very interesting. So, and you've been surfing what, since you were a kid?
Yeah, since I was about 14. So
do you still go?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All the time?
I mean, you know, when I can. I early July I was just under 2 weeks in Sumatra, Indonesia, surfing an amazing,
really?
An amazing
did
island.
Did you go there especially to surf there?
Yeah.
Really?
That's kind of the focus of most of my travels is I went surfing cool. there, yeah. You know, you mentioned something about labels, too. And, you know, I have to say, this little island south of Sumatra, I was just enveloped with the warmth of the Muslim culture there.
Mm-hmm.
It was absolutely amazing. These people are just seeing surfing for the first, they're only like 5-8 years into it. You know, these little kids running out of their little house in these villages,
uh-huh.
Saying, Mister, you have these pretty beautiful little girls, teenage girls,
yeah.
young ladies, wearing their thing on their head. I'm sorry, I don't know the name.
Burqa?
Yeah, that might be the burqa, but it's the head wrap thing,
yeah.
you know. And they're yellow, they're blue, they're purple. They're like,
right.
They're so beautiful, and their faces are so clear, and their eyes are so big, and their smiles are so warm. And the warmth I felt from there, I got interviewed by a university student talking about tourism that was starting to rise on this island, and this whole Muslim thing came up, and I actually had like an emotional moment, Sam. I, you know,
oh,
a little
wow.
embarrassed to
Very
say
because, interesting.
Because I said, you know, in my country we're so bent on labels and stereotypes and this and that, but it's such a larger world like the Muslim world, for example, and here I'm on this drop dead beautiful island with all these little villages, and every village has their mosque. And when me and my friend from New Zealand were coming back to our surf camp every night, because we'd be gone all day, we'd never ate the lunch at the surf camp. You guys, because dude, where were you all day? Dude, we were out, you know, surfing and spreading the love and checking out the island. But around 7 o'clock at night is the call to prayer. They do it 5 times a day. So every mosque has a loudspeaker, and it's like haunting you know, and they're all like
they call
floating.
Them the muezzin or something, right? The guys that actually chant from the,
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you have all these people in the village, all the ladies, all the guys, and they're dressed up so nice,
yeah.
And it's such a sense of devotion and community and unity and cohesion. And how do we have that? We get our paper in the morning, Saturday. I don't know. I mean. I just thought it was neat, and they're all like floating from different directions towards the mosque, and then there's like 7-8 villages, so you see this 7-8 times around,
yeah.
Sun, and then it's sunset, tropical island, the sun setting, and so yeah, Sam, the oceans provided me like all kinds of stuff,
that's
and
awesome.
I'm absolutely lost on it, but I had to mention that.
That's
little
so cool.
thing.
Yeah,
I love it.
Eric Munoz, can you tell people how they can find you, how they can get the book? You said on Amazon, I see. If you there's also openbookspress.com, right?
Yes.
So people can get it there as well. The book is Kalerpa Conquest. Are you on social media? Do you want people to contact you?
You know, I'm kind of a dinosaur that way.
Yeah, but you have a website?
But you know, I have an email, and
okay.
I have no problem giving that out, because yeah. I would love to interact with any, or if people want presentations or want to know more about it, or
yeah.
or if they want to, you know, help me be part of a team to go out and do Rachel's idea for a show or something. I have no idea where this is going to end, and I don't want to stop it anytime soon. But it's pretty easy. It's Eric, E-R-I-C, at PacificOceanArt.com. So Eric at PacificOceanArt.com. And one of the
doing? And what's the California Surf Museum? You gave me a card, a business card, California Surf Museum.
Yeah, no,
is that something that you do as well?
Yeah, so I got a couple hats on my head. And
yeah.
Yes, I'm also, I was president and board member of the Agua Hedionda Lagoon Foundation for many years, and I love them, and aguahedionda.org, and you can check out the Lagoon Foundation that was in the middle of my story. But then recently I got involved with the California Surf Museum. It's in Oceanside. It's an incredible place that showcases the culture and history and lifestyle of surfing. Right now we have an exhibit called China Beach, and it's a very moving exhibit about the soldiers and the veterans who went to Vietnam and used surfing when they were there at China Beach and a couple other beaches in Vietnam, and they had to bring boards in, and
really?
They had to, you know, use whiskey and other alternative means to buy these boards. Of course, the Australian guys just got the board. They got the best boards, and they were at the best surf spots. But it tells a story, kind of like China Beach, the TV series.
Yeah.
We have an exhibit there, and veterans are coming in, and they're leaving absolutely shattered and in tears and gratitude.
Really?
Because they say,
wow.
We have never been thanked until they went to the Oceanside location for the California Surf Museum. So yeah,
that's
I'm very
cool.
I'm very happy to be vice president of that. We're having a gala in October. We're going to commemorate Jerry Lopez, Jericho Poplar, and Fernando Aguirre, who is the guy who got surfing into the Olympics.
Really?
And so you can go to...
Very cool, man. Yeah, very nice.
You can go to surfmuseum.org and check that out. And
yeah, very cool. Eric, we're totally out of time.
Okay.
That was
great. So everybody wants to get a hold of you. They can email you. They can find you. Go to... Or check out California Surf Museum, also preserving our surfing heritage. And you know what? You just got me in the mood for taking a drive down the coast and stuff. You know, this we have such great coast here, right?
We sure do.
In Southern
California.
That's
why I'm at the beach every weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, very cool. Eric, thank you so much for joining us. We wish you a lot of continued success with eradicating this around the world. I mean, obviously a big problem that we didn't even realize exists. You know,
thank you, Sam. Thank you, Rachel.
Of course,
thank you,
and thanks for making your way all the way here from Carlsbad. So we appreciate that. All right, Rachel, have a good weekend.
You too.
No, too much smoking. But then again, what does too much really mean, right?
I'll try.
Yeah,
no
I
promises.
Don't think it's gonna work. Anyway, I'll make up for what you missed there. Everybody, thank you so much for listening to us, and stay tuned for some more great shows on this awesome station, if I do say so myself. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you on Monday.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Rachel, exclusively on LA Talk Radio.